But this is one more thing I'm going to ask you to do before we get to the message today. I'm going to ask you if you would right now, please pull out your phone. Pull out your phone. I can tell if you're shifting in your seat or not, okay? Pull out your phone. And this is not go to bcnazarene.org/gatherings, okay? So I'm not telling you to pull out your phone. And this is what I would ask. If you would please set your alarm for 12:40 p.m. today, okay? Please set your alarm, if you would, for 12:40 p.m. and then put your phone away. Cool. If you have your Bible with you, we're going to be in Genesis chapter 28 this morning. Genesis chapter 28. We have been tracking with the story of Jacob, and the scene that we're going to look at his life today is a little bit out of order from some of the other scenes that we have seen in Jacob's life. The scene that we are going to look at today happens at a unique time. He has just stolen his brother's blessing, his brother's inheritance from him. He has not yet realized all the things that God is going to give him. We've talked in the last couple of weeks about his wives and his kids and all those blessings that God gives him. And yes, I did say wives, but that's unique to that story. That's not your prayer. That's not your prayer. Different time and place. And so he's at this kind of incredible crossroads in which he is anxious and anticipatory about all the things that God is going to do, and yet at the exact same moment afraid. Because while God has promised him great things, he does not have anything. He is alone, and he is scared. And we see this scene from his life in which God does something incredibly powerful. And so we're going to be in Genesis chapter 28, starting in verse 10, and it says this. Meanwhile, Jacob had left Beersheba and traveled toward Haran. At sundown, he arrived at a good place to set up camp and stop there for the night. Jacob found a stone to rest his head against and lay down to sleep. As he slept, he dreamed of a stairway that reached from the earth up to heaven. Stairway to heaven in the Bible. Some of you didn't know. And he saw the angels of God going up and down the stairway. At the top of the stairway stood the Lord, and he said, "I am the Lord, the God of your father Isaac, the God of your grandfather Abraham, and the God of your father Isaac." I want you to see this. The way that the Lord phrases this is so important. He says, first off, he says, "I am the Lord," like blanket statement. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter what you think. "I am the Lord." And yet he shows that it was personal for his grandfather. He says, "And I was recognized as the God of your grandfather Abraham and the God of your father Isaac." But he doesn't call Jacob his God yet, because Jacob's not there. And so while he's the Lord, regardless of what you think, he is not yet his personal God. He doesn't have a relationship with him. You can inherit a lot of things from your family. Some good, some bad. Don't elbow your spouse right now. You inherit a lot of things from your family, but you cannot inherit their faith. You have to make that decision on your own. And so what we're going to see within this is the process of this, the Lord becoming Jacob's God, and not just his parents and grandparents' God, but becoming his God within there. So he says, "I am the God of your grandfather Abraham, the God of your father Isaac. The ground you are lying on belongs to you. I am giving it to you and your descendants. Your descendants will be as numerous as the dust of the earth. They will spread out in all directions, to the west and the east, to the north and the south, and all the families of the earth will be blessed through you and your descendants. What's more, I am with you, and I will protect you wherever you go. One day I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I have finished giving you everything I have promised you." Then Jacob awoke from his sleep and said, "Surely the Lord is in this place, and I wasn't even aware of it." But he was also afraid and said, "What an awesome place this is. It is none other than the house of God, the very gateway to heaven." The next morning, Jacob got up very early. He took the stone he had rested his head against. And BC Naz kids this morning, they are practicing this story by resting their heads on a stone. Hey, if you need to call CPS, I mean, that's up to you. That's entirely your thing. I invite you, if you're starting to doze off and I am not interesting enough for you, you can lay your head on a stone. A sharp, jagged stone, if you would like. So he takes this stone that he turns into a pillow, okay? We are luxurious here in the 21st. He takes the stone that was a pillow that he rested his head against, and he set it upright as a memorial pillar. Now, we're going to see the shift throughout Jacob's life over and over again, that something was ordinary becomes something significant. And so this thing that was a pillow now becomes a pillar. Now, I can say that like this. If we were in the deep south, it would lose all meaning because all you would hear was the pillar became a pillar. I love that joke. I just got to tell you, I have been waiting all week for that. Thank you. It says, then he poured olive oil over it. He named that place Bethel, which means house of God, although it was previously called Luz. Then Jacob made this vow, if God will indeed be with me and protect me on this journey, and if he will provide me with food and clothing, if I return safely to my father's home, then the Lord will certainly be my God. And this memorial pillar I have set up will become a place for worshiping God, and I will present to God a tenth of everything he gives me. I want to comment on this real quick. This is not our focus for today, but this is what you see, is that as Jacob is accepting the Lord as his own God, as he is claiming ownership of this relationship, he is not passive. He is active within it. Like part of that relationship is not just him receiving what God has done, but beginning to contribute back to God, right? It's not just, right? I know there's a lot of you. I didn't hear anyone. My goodness, this is the quietest the room has ever been. Are we in a library? Come on, this is church, okay? And so it's not just accepting that is an important piece, but he contributes back. And I think so often when we talk about this in this context of contributing or giving, it feels so harsh and so obligatory. And that's not how Jacob sees it within this. It's a matter of when you view it like this, if I view that everything that I have, God has given me, then my contribution back is not like a deposit. Like, it's grateful. Like, when I understand that everything I own and all my belongings came from God anyway, every blessing that I have came from God anyway, then a contribution back is done with joy and not obligation. Does that make sense? Okay, good. We're moving. All right, this is what I'm gonna need. I'm gonna need your help today. And I'll explain why I'm going to need your help. And I've talked about this, Reese, but I just want to make this abundantly clear. I've had this realization that if when it comes to especially this part of the service, that this is something that we do together. And if it's not something that we do together, if the sermon is not something that we are equally proclaiming and participating in, then the reality is that I cease to be a preacher and this just becomes a presentation. And instead of this being a message, then I become an entertainer. And I have no desire to be an entertainer, just to be clear. My family laughs at me enough. I don't need all of you laughing at me as well. I mean, you can laugh at me, that's fine. I don't want you to like get nervous about that. If what we do in worship is not our mutual engagement, our mutual calling out, our mutual proclamation of who God is, then what happens is that worship simply becomes us coming to see a cover band that plays someone else's worship songs. And I don't have any anticipation that any of you are willing to get up early on a Sunday morning to go see a cover band, right? If you do, we need to talk because you need better taste. Like, you don't wake up early to go see a cover band. And so that's it for me. I want to send you out of these doors on a Sunday morning. I want to send you out of these doors with momentum to carry this out in your life. But at the same point in time, I want this to be something that we mutually declare. Amen? So I'm going to need your help today. So turn to your neighbor. The title of the message today, I want you to give it to him. The title of the message today is It's Time. Now turn to the person on your other side who you like a little bit less and just revealed that and then shrug it off. I'm like, no, that's not true. And tell them again. Say, it's time. I want to take you back to that time in your life that we all had. For some of you, it was with your parents. For others of you, it was with a teacher or another authority figure in which you tested the limits. You tested the line as to what was allowed. And like you knew there were possible punishments. You knew there was discipline. You knew you might get yelled at or privileges taken away or spanked if you grew up in that household. Like you knew that was there. You knew it was a possibility. But you also knew that the line had some wiggle room, right? You knew it wasn't a firm, hard, solid line. You knew there was some give and take. And sometimes we'll go out with friends, or friends will come over to our house, or we'll be over at their house, and their kids are being crazy and running amok. And I've got other language for that I'm not going to share on a Sunday morning. And they're just like going through all that stuff. And like the parent will turn and they'll threaten the kid. Like, you know, like you get that where like they're having the nice conversation. Yeah, how are you? You stop that right now. Okay. And they're kind of doing that. And then they start like threatening them. And they're like, oh, I'll do this. If you do this one more time, I'll do this. And you get that moment where you kind of lock eyes with their kid. And you know the parents aren't getting up. And they know their parents aren't getting up. It's like, if you do this one more time, and you kind of look at each other like, yeah, you got some room. I know it. And I do it too. Like I'll sit on the couch and I know I'm supposed to get up and correct my kids' behavior so they are responsible adults and not menaces to society. And instead of getting up and correcting my kids' behavior, I'll count instead, because this is my greatest weapon against my children, accounting, apparently. And you may be judging me, but while I count and maybe a little lazy, you're judging, and that's worse. So just so you know. And when I count, like we all count the same way. It goes like this. It goes one, two, and what number comes next? Two and a half. Two and three quarters. Yeah, I'm almost so close. And my kids, like, they know it. Like, they know where that is. But then they also know, and it's not necessarily because I yell. It's not because, like, something significant happens. It's not because I've drawn, like, if you do this one more time, and they know if they do. Like, but my kids know, like, that there's a line. And they know when they cross the line. And like, sometimes it'll go like this, where I'll tell my kids to get upstairs and put something away. And they walk up the stairs like this. Move your feet. I am. And then, like, they get it, like, and all of a sudden, something will click, and they know they're about to get beat. And those feet start moving a lot faster. And my kids, every single time, what they know is they know it's time. Like, we don't press it any further. Like, we can't test them any further. It's time. Like, we need to move. We need to go. We need to act right now, right? Anyone grow up in that where, you know, like, all of a sudden, it's time. I need to go. And this is my hope for you today. I want to be really clear on this. My hope today is that you will tell that to yourself. Is that you will be able to go to yourself and you will be able to say, it's time. And I've sat on this long enough. I've delayed this long enough. I've hesitated long enough. I've given myself enough excuses. I've acted like there's going to be some future circumstance that is ideal. And that you will be able to look at your life and you will be able to go, it's time, right? Like, it's time. And I love my Celebrate Recovery friends. I see them all the time. They're going to people. There you go. I love you guys. Just love it. And they go to people all the time and say, don't wait. Like, don't wait to start to get better. Don't wait to move towards health. Like, it's time. You have to decide right now. For some of you, as we talk about inviting your friend, you have waited for the ideal circumstance to invite a friend. And I want to tell you, this is as ideal of a, oh my goodness, I couldn't pick that up because the paper is so thick. You see how much we care? You can't tell how thick the paper is. And that you'd be able to go, like, it's time. I need to move on this. Or you've been holding off on serving and participating in the mission of what God is doing and his call upon your life. And that you would be able to look at that and to go, it's time. I'm not making excuses anymore. I'm not waiting for something anymore. It's time. I need to act. I need to go. And some of you, maybe on the other end, you did this unique thing, not a lot of you, but some of you, that you signed up to serve, and then you quit returning our phone calls. And I just want to tell you, man, it is one thing to ghost a friend or to ghost an ex-girlfriend or boyfriend, but to ghost your church, like that's another thing entirely. And you go, okay, I need to return that phone call. It's time. I actually need to act. And I had this a couple weeks ago, where after a service, it just didn't go well. And sometimes that's me. But if we're gonna be honest, sometimes it's you. And sometimes you don't come up here nearly with enough caffeine in your body to do what we're seeking to do on a Sunday morning. But I have news for you. I never take caffeine, and I had half a cup of coffee this morning. So I have enough caffeine for all of us, just so you know. But I had this moment where it didn't go well. And so I just kind of went to a back room within the church, and I was praying, and I was thinking. I was like, what is going on with this? And I remember this lesson that I had learned as a kid. When I grew up, I played a little bit of baseball, and I was a pitcher. And then they wouldn't let me pitch anymore because I hit too many batters. So I took up dodgeball, which worked way better for me. And there was this spot where I struggled with my accuracy, and I couldn't throw a strike. And the more I thought about it, the harder it became. And one of my coaches, he said this, and this is a common phrase. He says, "You're aiming it. Just throw it. You're aiming it. You're too focused on what you're doing. You're too mindful of your mechanics and your delivery and where you want the ball to go. Just throw it. Like, just trust that you're going to do it." And that, honestly, I believe was the word that God spoke to me that Sunday morning years ago. Quit aiming it. Quit thinking about what you're doing and just do it. Just do what I have led you to do to be able to say in that moment, it's time. Like, it's time to just act. And this is what happens in Jacob's life. And for most of the attention, when we look at this account from his life, we focus on the revelation that God gives him. We focus on the revelation that he has from God, the dream that God gives him. But that's not the important piece of the story. And I want to tell you that you may have a tendency within your life to spend your entire time not praying for a dream of a stairway to heaven, but this is what you may do. You may spend your entire time praying that God would reveal his will for your life, right? And what we end up doing is we sit on doing nothing instead of at least doing something. And we wait for the ideal circumstance instead of doing what God has set before us. And more important than the revelation that Jacob has from God is this, is the realization that he has about God. And while our minds can get caught up in what and how, I believe at the end of the day, our faith is at its best when it is only focused on who. When it is only focused on who. When I got married to my wife, we did not know all the what's and we did not know all the how's, but we knew the who. We knew who we were married to, and so we were okay with that and moving forward. And the same is true with your faith. You will not always know what. You will rarely know how, but you can know who. And this is the realization that Jacob has. It says this, "Then Jacob awoke from sleep and said, 'Surely the Lord is in this place, and I wasn't even aware of it.'" Surely the Lord is in this place, and I wasn't even aware of it. And I started asking a bunch of people before this day. I asked them about this account from Jacob's life, because it's a story that most people who've studied the Bible much, they know. And I started asking them about it, and I wanted to know what was Jacob's realization. Because I wanted to see how they remembered it. And they didn't have a Bible in front of them. So I wanted to know, like, what did Jacob say? And it was amazing to me what their response was. Is they got the first part right dead on. Like every single one of them said, "Surely the Lord." Like every single one to a T, "Surely the Lord." And then they had some variation of the last part of it. It was like, Like, and I didn't even know. And I wasn't even aware of it. And I didn't realize it. But they got the essence of the idea. And so they had the first part nailed. And the last part, they had the general idea. But this is what fascinated me, is every single person who I asked changed a part in the middle. And while they had the surely the Lord, and I wasn't even aware of it, they switched one word. And they switched it to surely the Lord was in this place. And I get it, because the dream had happened. Like, he had woken up from the dream, and so it's easy to think that. But I think that's often how we think. And instead of realizing that God is here, we think he was here. Like, if we could go back to another time where things were better, where life seemed easier, where we were used to the more traditions and customs that we had, that's where God acted. Or maybe we think it like this. We don't think of it in a past tense. We think of it in a future tense. We think God will be here. Like, once I get things a little more situated, well, once I get stuff going better, that's when God is going to act. I had a conversation with a pastor friend just the other day, and I didn't correct them because I try not to do that a lot, because I can be a jerk when I do that. But they were going through, and they were talking about the kids and the youth in their church, and they said, we need to invest in them because they're the church of tomorrow. And I just bit my tongue. I was like, no, they're the church of today. Like, they're not the church of tomorrow. You heard that this morning, just a minute ago. Like, Danelle shared. My daughter said to me, the devil doesn't win. The devil doesn't win. And there's no piece of that in which you went, once my daughter was more educated, once my daughter understood more, that's when God is going to start using her. That is when God is going to start moving in her life. That wasn't true for Samuel. That wasn't true for David. That wasn't true over and over again. And here's the reality, is that you will have a tendency in your life to think God was here and God could have used me before I messed up, right? If I didn't do this, if I didn't screw up, if I didn't make that mistake, then God could have used me. Or maybe God will use me once I grow up. Once I get things together, once I get my life in place, and Jacob has the realization, is that yes, God was in the past, and absolutely God will be in the future. We know that. But more important than either of those is the fact that God is here in this moment. Because here's the deal. If God is, I need to step away from the baptism. Well, I did that the last service too. I make the tech people really nervous. I'll try to step back. If God is here in this moment, what that means is regret is a choice, but not a reality. Like, regret is not something I have to live in, but I can choose to live in it. If it's not just that God will be there in the future, but he is here now, then anxiety becomes a choice, but not a reality. That I am not a victim to my regrets, and I am not a victim to circumstances I can't control, because God is here right now. Come on, I know some of you are aware of that. That God is here, present in this moment. And then Jacob does this amazing thing, is he doesn't change his location, but he changes his perception. He doesn't change everything that's happening in the moment, but he changes how he looks at it. Because here's the reality. It's not that God wasn't present, right? It's not like all of a sudden God wasn't present and they showed up and Jacob was like, oh, you like the guest at your house who just kind of walked in and you didn't realize, and they're helping themselves to your fridge and you're like, oh, you're here and you're helping yourself. Fantastic. That's awesome. That's not what happens in this account. It's not that God wasn't present. It's that Jacob wasn't, right? It's not that God wasn't there. It's that Jacob wasn't there. And we understand he has reason why, right? Like, he's on the run from his brother. He's a little scared. He has nothing. He is at a place, the place was called Luz. You know what luz means? Nothing. Like, it's inconsequential. It doesn't matter. And so Jacob's at this spot of this place where he's fearful, he's afraid, he has nothing, and he's at a place that doesn't matter. And so we would excuse him for not being present, right? Because he's got good reason not to be present. But because he wasn't there, he didn't realize that God was here. And this is what I want you to see today, that the here that matters will never come if I'm there. Like the place in your life where you find significance and belonging and meaning, you will never realize that if you're living in regret or if you're living in anxiety of the future. You will never realize what you have found if you are not present in this moment. And so this is the perception shift that Jacob has. It says this, if we can look at it in verse 19. It says, he named that place Bethel, which means house of God, although it was previously called Luz. That's just fun. Turn to your neighbor, tell him Luz. Say, I Luz you. But this place that has no meaning, this place that doesn't matter, same place, same circumstance, same scenario, is now Bethel. What meant nothing is now house of God. And I want to ask you today, I think this is maybe the most important question I could ask you. Are you living in Luz? Or are you living in Bethel? Like for your life, are you living in Luz? Is it meaningless? Is it nothing? Are you just moving through? Are you stuck in that God was? Or are you only hoping that God will be? Or have you had the realization of God is? And so even though I may be worried about what happened and concerned about what will happen, I can acknowledge in this moment, he is now. And I think there's this massive difference, and we talk about it like this, like somehow the idea of to like anticipate and be excited about what's yet to come is somehow disrespectful to God. And let me explain it like this. So every night, I just know what's going to happen when my family sits down to eat. I know what we're going to have happen because it's always the same reactions. Is I'm going to have one of my kids that doesn't care about what they're eating. I'm going to have two of my kids that don't like what we're eating. And then the fourth kid is going to be thrilled about whatever we're eating. Like, that's just kind of how it works. And so, like, we'll be like, we're having pizza. Like, I hate pizza. Like, you're a child. Like, who hates pizza? And so... And what will happen within this is two of my daughters, every single meal, will take the food out of the serving dish and we'll put it on their plate and they'll look at it and they'll be like, do I have to eat that? Do you want to sleep inside? I'd like to say I don't say that, but it's happened. And they're like, look at it, and they'll just be disgusted with what they have. And then my son, who's two, this is what he does, is I'm attempting to teach him that the plate, while a container for your food, right? That's partially what the plate is. Like, you take it from the central serving dish and then you put it on your plate and it holds your food. While a container for your food is also a barrier for your food. Does that make sense? And he doesn't understand that. Like, he doesn't understand if it's in the middle of the table, it's fair game. But if it's on my plate, it is mine, right? Like, Joey doesn't share food. That's how I feel in that moment entirely. Like, and what my son doesn't understand is, like, we'll set it down and we'll put the food on the different plates. And we have to watch because, like, we always have to have one adult at the table because he'll just climb on the table and start looking at everyone's plate. And then he'll just grab stuff and put it back on his plate. Be like, mashed potatoes. Mine. And I want you to see that, like, that these are different things, right? There is a massive difference between I am ungrateful for what has been given me and I love this and I'm so excited about what's yet to come, right? Like, these are massively different. And so let me tell you a story. The other day, we're walking through a location that we were looking at for our Fairborn campus, which is coming in September of this year, and I can't be more excited about. And I don't know if it's gonna work out, but we're walking through this building and in strip mall, and we're looking at different stuff, and we got done, and we are pumped. Like, we are pumped. And then the other day, I was having a conversation with JC, our executive administrator, and he goes, "Yeah, I was watching the show, and they're talking about these different things, and I don't know if we're confident or if we're arrogant that we would look at that and be so excited and think, oh, we can do this. Oh, yeah, this will work." And this is what I realized. No. We're people from Bethel. Like, that's what that is. We're choosing to be people that when others may see nothing, when others may see empty space, we see a spot that God can move. Like, we see a spot where God is going to act. And so here's my call within this to you of, let's be people from Bethel. Like, let's be people who see opportunity where others make excuses. Let's be people who see the potential of God when others people see only dismal and dark circumstances. Come on, amen, right? Like, that's what I wanna be. I wanna be someone from Bethel. And it's only at this point in time that Jacob changes his perspective that he's able to receive the promise. It's not when his location changed, when his circumstance changed, when his scenario changed. It is only when his perspective changes that he's able to receive what God has promised him. Let me show you this. This is the most important part. Verse 15, God's word to Jacob. "I will not leave you. I will not leave you until I have finished giving you everything I have promised you. I will not leave you until I have finished giving you everything I have promised you." I wanna read that again, and I wanna make sure you don't hear this as an impersonal statement to Jacob, but as a personal statement and promise to you, okay? This is not written anonymously. "I will not leave you until I have finished giving you everything I have promised you." And this is what I feel in my heart more than anything else, okay? If God says to you, "I'm not finished with you." If God says to you, "I'm not done with you." If God is willing to look at you and say, "I'm not finished with you," then why are you finished with you? Why would you be giving up on you before God gave up on you? Why would you be willing to throw in the towel before God was done? Why would you in a moment, and maybe it may be a thousand different things. I had this conviction this week. I was sharing with Matt Scruggs, who's gonna be our campus pastor at Fairborn. We don't have time for you to applaud right now, okay? Just to be clear, but that should happen in the future. And we were doing a hospital visit, and I was sharing with him about a time that I went to a hospital to visit someone. And I started praying all the things. Pray, be with the doctors, give them wisdom, be with the medical staff, be with all these people. We ask that you heal through the medical staff. And the guy who I was praying for, he stopped me in the middle of my prayer, which was just really rude. But he stopped me in the middle of my prayer and he goes, "Hey, I know they're gonna do that. I need you to pray for God to intervene." And I had this realization that I had been lowballing my prayers so that if God didn't act, I would have my bases covered. That if God didn't act, that I would still be able to save face. And he goes, "I don't need you to pray for that. I need you to pray for God to move." And so I prayed for that because that's what I believed. And I'm like, if God's not done, why am I done? And so hear me in this. It's time. Okay, it's time. Like not in the future, not was, not will be. It's time. Turn your alarm off. Stand to your feet. Turn your alarm off. Stand to your feet. And this is what I want you to hear. We are people from Bethel. We are people from Bethel. We see opportunity when others make excuses. We don't need a reason to act because God has given us every reason that we need. Come on, church, I know you're there. Come on, church, I know you're there. And we have sat on excuses for long enough, and we have sat behind bad behaviors long enough, and make this your declaration today. It's time. It's time right now. Amen. It's time right now. And so let's celebrate this together. Take hold of your faith. Claim what God has promised to you. And let's move forward, seeing opportunity where others make excuses. Make this your declaration.